At the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website stevebick.com. Snowy, a little snowy. It's beginning to look a lot like time to go to Hot Springs. That's what it's looking like. Looks like it's time to go to Tucson. And then on to Los Al. Yeah, Tina was giving me the business last night. Sure enough, you're the snow's flying and you're leaving. Hey, it missed last year and we got to get out, right? We can't. What's the saying? I know there's a saying, right? The Rolling Stone gathers no moss, right? That's the I like moss. What's wrong with moss? You ever ever go out in the woods and at least mossy? I'm gonna do another recap day because there was just so much. There was so much that went on, and we can actually get quite a bit accomplished with a Kenny McPeak visit. Wow. Kenny's going to join us early, and he started on Thanksgiving and kept winning en boutant, and I guess only Crazy Beautiful, really the only, I suppose, major disappointment. We'll talk to Kenny, and he's got a strong hand, it feels like, of these two-year-olds becoming three. And, of course, as of tomorrow, we'll get that much closer to Jan 1. And the three-year-olds, just like that, it's classic season. It doesn't take much but a turn of the calendar. So we'll talk to Kenny. And, in fact, yesterday he talked about and put up an urge for Twitter users to follow Lucky Seven Stable that is in a wonderful. You want to talk about kind of breaking into the game, and we've had a fair share of this, right, of late. You think about what Chester Thomas did, and the. Getting lucky go back to Bob Edwards. I mean, who jumped in and had more success fast than Bob Edwards? But Lucky Seven, and we'll get all the details about their background and. Sitting here with Smile Happy and Rattle and Roll. How would you like to, be looking forward to 3-year-old campaign? You got these two, and we'll talk to Jay at the end of the week, Jay Privman. But Jay wrote up the Kentucky Jockey Club, his Road to the Derby analysis, which are, I can't laud them enough. They are not just useful for post-race analysis and understanding what happened in the race, but also to project where these horses may go, whether some are going to do better as sprint distances, and others that might end up, you had at this time of year, there's still plenty of experimentation going on. Turf to dirt and sprint to route and that sort of thing. So make sure you read Jay's piece. Always insightful. And we'll talk to McKenny about everything else, too. He's got plenty to talk about. Brendan Walsh, as promised, too. We'll talk to Bren back from the West Coast. And, after hearing from Bob Tiller yesterday and how tough it's going to be, and that van pulls up and, takes away the big horses, it's tough. It's tough for everybody. So we'll get the Maxfield laurels and career recap from Brendan as well. Andy Serling early today. We'll hear from Andy at 10. And actually, I reached out to Scott Shapiro. And if you didn't see this from Sunday, Shap gave out played the Derby City Six, put together a ticket in the 146. I have to go back and I've got it here. And hit for 21,000 and was out there for anybody, obviously. And usually we talk to Scott when we're at Derby. Couldn't resist the chance to talk to him about his approach, and I'm my feelings toward the jackpot concepts, the distribution day is the day that I'm only interested, but we've had, it's now been years. I mean, going back to our late friend Chet, who explained his approach, and Chet played it for action, and essentially didn't care about the jackpot day to day. He was playing, for $2,000, $3,000, $4,000. This is when it was in its infancy at Gulfstream, and we've debated this so many different times and ways. But Sunday was interesting. Gus went after Churchill. I went after Del Mar, and I missed the Miller horse with DeSormo. KD just was a terror. And a 40? Was it, how much was it? It was that horse, Handy Dandy in the second leg. And one thing that when it comes to the West Coast, and I, that I love the clocking reports and use them. I mean, on a scenario like this, a carryover or any, I mean, pick five, just any card on West Coast, Southern Cal. I want to see Andy Harrington and Toby Terrell, actually, DRF2. The fact that there's no clocking at... The fact that there's no clocking available at St. Louis Ray makes it really agonizing. And this was one of those circumstances. This was a horse that was going dirt to turf and stretching out and had been gelded. Now, if you think back, I was a huge Fury Capcori fan. I always liked Fury Capcori. As a stallion, however, you were looking at a hideous statistic. Progeny of Fury Capcori, first time turf, were 1 for 23. 1 for 23. And was out of a Mass Media mare. And who actually had run on turf, but, nothing particularly notable about Golden Bucket's turf career, turf tries. So this was tough. I thought this was a tough horse to use prominently. I'm looking at my notes. I've got my turf, my T circled for first turf. I've got the arrow, meaning stretch out, and I've got a check mark by the gelding, first gelding. So it's funny. It's not as if. Some of these stats, there are categories where Miller, excels. This wasn't necessarily one of them. Stretching out, sprint to route, 12%. First turf, 11%. Just all kind of ordinary numbers. Dirt to turf, Miller actually 21%. That was one positive for $2 for an even. For an even $2 on the ROI front. But I thought this was a very difficult horse. So this was frustrating. It's funny, I keyed on that Crosby Beach, who was 8-1. And in fact, Bobby Shoemaker, and we're texting back and forth. He said, would you like anything today at Del Mar? And I said, at 8-1, I said, that Crosby Beach looks good to me. And actually got bet down to 4-1, and I won't say I was all that confident on the lead, but ran okay. Had very positive notations on national turf too, so I keyed off of Crosby Beach and ended up, and that Dancing Rinka I used as well. And the disappointment in that race was Breakfast Ride, who was cold on the board and then did not run well. Ended up ninth, beaten 8 or 9, 7 or 8, 9. So anyway, the two jackpot opportunities, they were both interesting, and we'll hear from Schaap and get his approach. And I'm curious how often he plays them on a going basis. But that was the one that got me. We did cut the late pick four for a buck, which kind of paid for the multis for the day, but. It's nice to hit, though. You want to hit them. I mean, that even, and, this one, and the ticket I put together, I think, was $86, $86.40, I think, was what I put together. And Del Mar paid $10,142, which is, that's worth playing. And there was literally that was the tough horse. That was the horse that you needed to somehow get to. In the 12-horse field. Maiden turf mile with mostly lightly raced. One-time, two-time starters. There was one horse, the Steve Knapp, the Lookout Point, had run him. Handful of times, and is a horse that keeps picking up checks, third, fourth, fifth, just keeps amassing checks. Nothing wrong with that, actually, with plenty of owners saying, I don't mind picking up checks on the way to, it's a 70, what's it, $70,000 purse, right? So keep running in those maiden specials, you can pay some bills, right? That's it. Yeah, Regal Glory, you only had to go too deep in that eighth, Fowler Blue and Heaven's Music. 3-1, by the way, Fowler Blue, the Louis Mendez, 3-1 was a terrific price. I put Heaven's Music on top only because I expected, You know, Fowler Blue was 2-1. Heaven's Music was 5-2. And I just thought, all right, you know, I'll go. I thought they were pretty interchangeable. And I thought, let me go with the slightly longer price. And Heaven's Music, you know, seemed like speed. And then instead, Fowler Blue, the bug, the 7-pound bug, Herrera, goes to the lead. And boy, looked a winner every step. And you got $8 and change, $8.40. That was a nice price. And then, the nightcap, Tony Ann and Charges Dropped, ran 1-2. And those are the only two we used. Solo and Nemo for Phil D'Amato in that starter allowance. I think I used three in there with Big Scott Daddy, who really didn't run, just kind of ran around there, didn't ever really offer much. And in the first leg, I used four, that maiden group, that horse we brought up with Ron yesterday, Newgrange, the Baffert, that got an 80 buyer. I just thought, you know what, I'm not going to, let's use everybody who, you know, has potential to be alive here, essentially, right? There was, the D'Amato, who had some positive work notes, did not run well. But Got Thunder, Newgrange, Mow Them Down, and Sense of Dominance. Those I'd used all four because I just figured, you know, the maidens, not, you know, make sure that you get through that first leg. So anyway, it was a good exercise. It was certainly worth trying, and we'll hear Shap and how he laid it out, his roadmap to a $20,000 score. And I'm sure he's heard from players who came along. We're going to hear from Chip Bock. It's that week that you hear from Chip Bock. They drew the opening day card for Turfway Thursday and got a nice start, it looks like, and kind of thumbed up and down and, you know, went through the, I was curious, you know, who's got horses, who's, you know, left horses in Kentucky, and, you know, who can blame them? It starts out with a mile and a quarter maiden race, 62,000. So it's an interesting, I tell you, it's going to be an interesting meet, because there's a real mix. You know, there's some very low level claimers, and that's mixed in with, you know, allowances and maiden races that are going to be run for, you know, for real money. And so we'll see what Chip's thoughts are and what he's hearing, and we'll find out how far along they are, where things are in Florence in terms of the building and getting up and running. So Kenny McPeak, Brendan Walsh, Chip Bock from Turfway, Andy Serling. We'll talk with Andy. I think this may be Andy's last visit of the season, if I'm looking at the calendar, because of course we'll be at Symposium next week, and he's off. So I think this will probably be Andy's seasonal farewell for the 2021 season. We'll see how far along he is on the Pick Six carryover for Thursday, where Shug has got that second timer in the first leg. Radio Days comes back for Joe Allen. Yeah, the $750,000 Gun Runner. We'll talk tomorrow about Gun Runner with Sid, and obviously with a month of racing left, including, you know, some high level racing. Gun Runner is going to just gild that freshman earnings mark, freshman sire earnings mark that he set. So should be fun. And we are looking forward to a few Andy opinions. All right, and we'll get his talk to him too about the carryover on Friday at at Aqueduct. It's funny. I did Aqueduct on Friday, Churchill on Saturday, and Del Mar on Sunday. And in each of the 3 days, there was one race that tripped me up in each of the big sequences. Had a couple of decent pops here and there. But the filly, the Diodoro filly stymied me. I'm sure I wasn't the only one, right? With Dream Lift. And that brought things to a screeching halt at Churchill. And on Friday, in that carryover, I forget who it... There were two C's that I had Bees and Honey as my third choice in the Comley. A couple too many horses that were, sort of fringe players. And Rudy Rod that I brought up yesterday. Rudy Rod, I mentioned to Mig. And that non-winners of two lifetime. Yeah. Thrown in as the fourth horse and actually had a B on the pick four and the pick five. But Valmont was a fourth choice to me. That's one of those horses. I'll bring that up with Andy. I brought this with Andy last week. We talked about horses that are, seeming professional maidens or that ilk, horses that pick up checks but don't win. Well, Valmont in that nightcap on Friday in the carryover is a perfect example. I mean, here's a horse that's 5-1 and is absolutely a nibbler and is a horse you've got to consider, especially if you're playing exotics. But is that a horse that, you're including prominently in your pick five and your pick six? And I had him as a C in the pick five and the pick four, but I left him off in the pick six. It's a tough horse to me to include. And actually 5-1, but paid $1,780. And breaks the Schneid. I don't think hadn't won in an extended period. So anyway, we'll talk with Andy about hard choices, right? Hard choices. Kenny McPeak's going to join us in that case. Let's reach for Kenny and get started with him. I'll save a couple of those things for a little bit later. I mentioned yesterday as we were wrapping up the future wager, first pool. If you dabbled, they handled 326,000, which was up considerably from last year, but last year, I what's the point of looking at anything from last year, right? And this is something too with Kenny that we'll see what his thoughts are. See if Kenny threw down, because Smile Happy and Rattle and Roll, they were two of the short prices. Smile Happy ended up being 8-1, and the favorite among individual entrants. The all other, as always, early, the first couple of rounds of future wagering, 3-5 on the Colts and Geldings, the 2019 all others. But Smile Happy, 8-1. Jack Christopher, second choice, 10-1. Then Rattle and Roll, 21-1. So jumped up. Papa Cap, who you've heard us talk with with Mark Cassie, and you had a heads up early on about Papa Cap, one of these gun runners from this season, 23-1, and then Kenny's Tis the Bomb. So Ken McPeak with the second, third, and second, fourth, and sixth, I should say, individual horses, and well, first, third, and fifth, if you take out the all others. Kenny, how much did you bet on your future wager horses?
Oh, I don't bet the future, Brooke. You kidding me? I got enough to worry about. No, I didn't do it. But hopefully I don't let anybody down. I saw where Mattress Mac made his bet the other day. I had a good conversation with him the night the horse won. He's certainly real happy that, you know, smile happy, keep and run happy in the conversation.
Well, and when it came to the sire wager, all other sires 7-2, but Run Happy, thanks to a big punch from Mac, a couple thousand, 7-1. Gunrunner, I tell you, Gunrunner 9-1 is that's a healthy number actually for Gunrunner, considering, you know, he's also got Gunite on the list, and there'll be other gun runners that emerge as we get into the classic trail in earnest. Let's talk about what went on over the weekend, and your Thanksgiving started beautifully with En Boutant.
Yeah, you know, she's been rock solid for an extended period now. You know, she kind of played second fiddle to Swiss Skydiver for a long time, but you know what? If you space her races right and you give her a good chance there, she's top class, and she loves Churchill. There's no doubt about that. She loves that racetrack.
That was frankly Thursday and Friday a big part of the conversation and the theme, given Maxfield's predilection for the surface as well, and you know, watching that race. I thought, as usual, Brian Hernandez Jr. It rides with such confidence, and you know, particularly Kenny, if you're a bettor and you bet Brian, you always feel like you're getting your money's worth. He's rarely in the wrong spot, or you know, rarely makes an overt bad decision.
He's a top journeyman rider. You know, he has been for a long time. People probably don't even remember he won the Breeders' Cup Classic, and
yep,
just barely out of being an apprentice. So he's he won that on Fort Lauderdale, but he is a pleasure to work with every day. We have a good working relationship. His work ethic, people don't realize. He's there 15 minutes before we breeze. He'll stay, and you know, he'll gallop one if you ask him to.
And always. It always seems to be in an upbeat mood too. Whenever you see him, he's got that, right? He had him and Rosario, they've got that sort of perma smile on their faces, which is nice. Now, what's the plan with her now? She's had a very nice season. You know, there's early season targets, things like the Houston Ladies Classic. What's on the agenda?
Nothing.
No, you're gonna.
No. She's gonna get a break. She's had a good productive season. She's gonna go to. She's going to Magdalena this afternoon. She's gonna get a little let down there. We're gonna do. We're gonna let Dr. Bramwich check her, do a full top to bottom exam of her, and then she's gonna probably get the whole month of December off and part of January, and then. At this point, no plans. We want to win a grade one with her, and we think the Latroyne in the spring is that race. And so in the short term, nothing. But in the long term, we want to win a grade one.
Fair enough. Nice to put one on the shelf, and know that you're gonna come back and have a campaign for her. Before we talk about Some of the other, particularly the 2-year-old Onslaught, some thoughts about Friday. King Fury tried the Clark, and Crazy Beautiful, obviously you'd like to have that start back in the Calmly.
Yeah, Crazy Beautiful was, I think, just real unlucky up there, but, disappointed is a heavy favorite, but she came out of it fine. She's back here. She's on pretty much the same routine as En Boutant. We won't get in any hurry with her. She's got nothing on the schedule. She's going to get probably 6 full weeks off, and then we'll regroup on that. I think she got left a step slow and ended up in a box, and then the speed was, the winner came from just outside us, but had a little better position. And then King Fury, that horse is a really nice horse, and we're going to give him maybe even more time than the other two fillies, because for him to transcend from a 3-year-old to a 4-year-old, he's got to get a little bigger and stronger and obviously faster. And at this point, he's just a notch below those grade one types. Every time I've raised him up into the grade one company, he struggled a little bit. He's obviously, when you're into grade threes and grade twos, he's right there. But certainly a really nice horse. That another one we want to figure out a way to find, great grade one win.
Well, he had, but I mean, to be fair, it really was a frustrating season, given the various travails that kept him out of races that you were knocking on the door for.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Yeah, he really wasn't all that lucky, but he's still young, and there's nothing that says that he couldn't be a better 4-year-old than he was at 3, and he was a good 2-year-old, and he's a very good 3-year-old, so we'll figure out a path for him, I'll probably raise him up a little more gradually, and we'll probably hunt a grade 3 or a grade 2 in the spring and go from there. But, lovely horse to be around.
Well, that gets us to Saturday, and you had so many obvious live chances, and when I sat down and was writing up the races, Kenny, it became pretty clear that there was potential here for a banner day, and of course, in the middle of the card, a couple of wins leading up to the stakes portion. Let's talk about the maiden winners first, and the allowance winner. Give us a little bit. Start with cocktail moments.
Cocktail moments, which ran a powerful race. I can't tell you going into the race that we expected that out of her. I do think the way that Corey Roeder is set up quite well for her. And I told Steve Coffin, who's the racing manager for Dick Hansen, I had never seen her train as well as she had the week going into this first start. And of course, you try to bring them up to these kind of things, and things like that go well. But she had was really happy, and even when we saddled her, she was really happy, like she was ready to do this. And it was a pleasant surprise. She's got a big future. We need to figure out a way to get her into some stakes company. And I think the first race is just the tip of the iceberg with her. I think she could get better real quick for us.
You mentioned Dixieana. This is an Uncle Mo filly out of a Where's the Ring mare, and I got to get some backstory on the dam and how that what the, because that's obviously not a name that I think too many people are going to be familiar with.
I don't know the backstory, to be honest. They just sent her to me and we got her ready. So I understand that the mare's a grade one winner, so certainly the class is there.
Well, and Where's the Ring? Other than having been a Donnie K. Von Hemel trainee for Pinhoke, know very little and recall very little. But River Maid, as you say, the dam, it's kind of funny, and I hadn't noticed this. I would have brought it up with him yesterday. Bob Tiller, who we talked to, of course, about Pink Lloyd, Bob Tiller trained the dam.
Is that right?
How about that?
Well, good. Yeah, that's good enough.
Pretty funny. You know, she won the Bessarabian and, the Ballad and similar kinds of, you know, Woodbine standards. There you go. We're gonna find out. We can find out more about cocktail moments. One off by, you know, by widening lengths. And I did put up the numbers, Kenny. And I don't remember what. I know you're not a huge fig guy. But I did.
I think she ran at 77 buyers, or someone told me.
Yeah, I put it up yesterday, and I can't remember. I've got it here somewhere. There's so many PPs on the desk, ridiculous. Right after, of course, cocktail. Not only did you score with cocktail moments, but the double that was produced as well. And tell us about Brett Jones and Cold Press Racing's Park on the Nile, who was the only first-time starter in the race, Kenny.
You know, this is a filly that I was real confident going in, and I actually put a few bucks on this one. She, you know, every time we've worked her, she is impressed. And she set down several breezes where she either went a minute or galloped out in a minute. And, you know, we typically don't press those things really hard, and certainly first time out. I mean, she had plenty of base of gate work under. I told Corey, I said, look, just let her run free. If she breaks good, let her go. All right, don't hesitate. And if they don't go with her, shame on them, because they're going to have a hard time catching her. And of course, you don't know how horses first timer is going to break. You don't know how they're going to handle adversity. But, you know, he came back wide-eyed, said, you weren't kidding, she's fast. I said, well, you know, there you go. But, you know, people don't typically bet on me first time out. We've talked about that in future mm-hmm. shows, but our feet past shows. But, you know, we're capable if we try. And certainly if you get a horse with her kind of talent or cocktail moments kind of talent, it makes it a lot easier, and it makes it fun.
Well, and this one by Cairo Prince. In fact, we talked about Cairo Prince during the sale, through the sale period, and Barry Jones bred this filly out of the Majestic Perfection mare, Park and Back, and obviously Brett. We certainly know Brett. What about Cold Press? Who is that?
Okay, so that's Nick D'Amore, which is, you probably know Anthony Manganiello and CM Farm.
Yeah, yeah.
And Nick is Anthony's grandson. And Nick approached me about buying a couple of yearlings. So I bought him a little filly named Zamuda, who was fourth on the same card race before. And actually the first race, and Park on the Nile was in the third. And Nick partnered with Burton Jones, and we work with Brett, but Burton Jones owns half this filly, and just real pleased to have a good horse for Governor Jones. But I picked her out, and we decided to do a deal where they shared, and Burton stayed in. But she was one that came out of the auction, and it worked out great. And this filly, I mean, I may take her to Remington and run her in the stake over there, that trapeze.
Yeah.
I think we could get some black type with her. And I envision her maybe staying at Oaklawn and pointing towards the Honeybee or the Martha, I think Martha Washington's a sprint, but maybe the Fantasy or something like that. But, you know, the upside on her is there too. So another good problem to have.
Well, you know, just looking at the auction history, this was an RNA actually in the November sale in 2019, 27,000. Anybody could have had this filly as a weanling, and then came back and turned up at Fasic in July, and you nabbed her for 110. So this feels like you know, feels like an upside an upside story moving in the right direction.
Well, it's that time of year. So let's see if they all move in the right direction.
Well, the dam, the dam was unraced, and actually goes back to a Hess, to the Hess family, to a Jersey bred that that was all right. Named Road to the Ball. It's the second second dam. Interesting. All right. Well, we'll watch for Remington and the Springboard Mild card, and always a nice flourish to finish at Remington. Let's turn to the stake action, Kenny, and we'll start with Lucky Seven, and actually we can cover off both the winner, both Smile Happy, the emergent Smile Happy, and Rattle and Roll, and actually talk about Rattle and Roll first, and what transpired there.
You know, his last work before he was supposed to go to Breeders' Cup, he wasn't 100% and behind, and I just felt like that he was one we needed to back off of a little bit, and he went off to Magdalena, and we parked him over there for a period, and he's been at right now he's at Keeneland, and he's easing back into things, and I think you'll see him getting back. I probably won't start getting back into work routine until mid January or even February, and he'll probably go to Gulfstream for the winter. And it'll be a bit of a process, but he should be fine. And I mean, he's a horse that's going to probably suit fairgrounds a little bit better because of his running style, and he likes the longer stretch. So at this point, we're kind of pointing that direction, thinking that direction, and if we can get two races into him before the Derby, I think that sets him up pretty good.
Well, in the meantime, pretty nice luxury for the Lucky Seven people, and I mentioned that you were going to be on and that you had let everybody know to follow Lucky Seven on Twitter. They had signed up, and it feels like they're very excited, and of course they should be. I mean, talk about their involvement, and this reminds me of some recent storylines like Chester Thomas and Brett Calhoun having two good three-year-olds at this juncture, soon to be three-year-olds.
They're great people. Lucky Seven stands for the Mackin family. There were seven of them, mother and father, who have both passed away, and so there's five now, and there's four brothers and a daughter and a sister. And they've been in racing for 30 or 40 years, and so it's not a this is not new to them. This is kind of a high moment for them for sure, and they're wonderful people. And they get it. They've played the game and they've been in it, but they've never had these kind. And this is the first horses I think I bought him six out of this crop, and Behave Virginia unfortunately passed. That filly died. Some people don't know that, but she broke her shoulder in a gallop one morning, which is tough. But they handled that well, and then of course Rattle and Roll, and we have Lucky Boss, who's also stakes placed, and he's a nice horse in his own right, although he didn't finish the season as strong as the other two did. But they've been around it a long time. They know the game. They love the game, and they're from Louisville. And I think it'd be awesome to, win a Derby for people like them. And certainly the fact that they're from Louisville, they race in Louisville, this is their home and has been, would be extra special for them. So it'll, we've got a little bit of pressure on us, but same time, it's exciting.
Well, and I'm going to guess that the not only from Louisville, but I see the red and black, the color of the jacket and their logo. So I'm guessing they're University of Louisville tied as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure. of course, I'm a UK fan, so we didn't get too deep into that. But my wife's also a U of L fan, or went to U of L, so that's a kind of a local thing here. But watched the football game that night, which was a great game to watch on from my version anyway.
Well, I'm going to avoid this. This can only annoy people if we get too far into that. The Jockey Club and Smile Happy Kenny felt like the right alternative in terms of prices, and again, in this case, Corey Lannery, I thought rode with tremendous confidence. Talk about what the thought process was approaching the race, and then what you saw as it unfolded.
Well, once he broke his maiden, we pointed him straight to the Jockey Club, and the hard part about that was that Tiz the Bomb was also pointed to that race. But these two worked together coming into this, and Smile Happy gave Tiz the Bomb everything and more in the workout. They worked 5/8 together the week before, and Corey came back and just said, "Wow, that's the first time he'd ever been on him." And it's unfortunate because Brian had broken Smile Happy's maiden, but of course, and I decided to put him on Tiz the Bomb. And of course, that's another story itself. But Smile Happy's a beast. I mean, I'm going to tell you. I mean, I've had some good horses in my career. For him to do that in his second career start, it was reminiscent of, some really, really top horses. I mean, he's got a bullseye on his back as far as being Derby favorite, and this horse is all that. He really is.
I think the term that Jay Privman used was served notice, and that seems appropriate. I mean, one with authority and in hand, and obviously looks like, going further. He's out of a Pleasant Tap mare, which we don't see all that much of. Talk about, when you looked at this. I mean, what you liked.
Well, I buy horses at auction on physical, and I looked at him at the sale, and he was just a big, beautiful horse. And I remember showing the pedigree to Mike Mackin, because he likes to ride down and walk through them with me. And the truth is, the people that I work for that I do that with, I've had a history of doing really well with people that give me budget to buy horses and say, okay. And I'll say, come on down, we'll walk through them and see what we come up with. And he says, well, I don't know, there's no pedigree there. He's looking at the page. He says, I don't like the pedigree. And I said, don't worry about the pedigree. I said, go see the horse. And so we went over and looked at him, and he was sold by Hunter Valley. And he said, wow, that's a lot of horse. I said, well, kind of Run Happy. People were kind of getting a little cross-eyed about Run Happy already. And then I told him, I said, Run Happy adds the speed. He's got Pleasant Tap, and he's out of Second Name's Relaunch. And the page was a little light when we bought him. He had one stakes placed horse in the first dam, and like a Turf Paradise Stakes winner in the second dam. And Bold Ruler was in the fourth dam sire. Actually, Grawstark and Bold Ruler. For those out there that follow pedigree, that it doesn't get much better than that. So I look at a lot of not only the sire, but the broodmare sire and the second dam sire, and certainly the foundation, the pedigree. And it was there, but was it... was it a horse that was going to bring a lot of money? No, and he didn't. I mean, he brought what he physically looked like he should bring, because he is a serious horse to be around. And he's a rare combination between a great mind and a great body. And he's got a lot of bone to him, too, which might make our job easier. Fingers crossed. So he's an exciting horse to be around. And of course, we've got three of them to be excited to be around. So it's a good problem.
Unbelievable. Smile Happy, and pays $1,160. Who developed? Where did he go to be started?
Well, all my young horses go to Dominic Brennan in Ocala.
Okay.
We've got that facility that I own, Silverleaf Hills, and which is the old Padua farm.
Yep.
And Dominic and I have worked together for 30 years, and we've worked in tandem, and look, my success is his success. He broke Curlin, he broke Tejano Run, he got Skipaway ready when Skipaway was with Sonny Hines. That's before I had horses with him. He got Take Charge Lady ready. I mean, I can give you a long, long list of,
sure,
of grade one horses that Dominic Brennan's got going. And he's got a crop down there right now that we're getting ready for next year. And he's already, you know, got his eye on a few there. And we're gonna hopefully become a bit of a juggernaut. I think the facility there is contributing to the success we're talking about.
How do you foresee going forward with him, timing-wise and direction?
He's going to train tomorrow at Churchill. We're going to probably train him for a few days, and then he's supposed to truck to Florida. He'll go to Silverleaf probably within the week, and we're going to probably do some light stuff with him there, just keep him moving. And then at some point he'll land at Gulfstream and get ready for the winter at Gulfstream. Rattle and Roll will go to Gulfstream. Chizabama will go to Gulfstream. Sandstone, who was third in the Goldenrod, will go to Gulfstream. So there's a lot of my best horses will all be down there at some point during late December, certainly early January at the latest.
But well, you mentioned
this is an Oakland horse.
Yeah.
I think he could go to the Southwest. I think he could go to the Rebel, Arkansas Derby. That's going to depend upon plane flights and what kind of logistics we're going to have to struggle with Tex Sutton. If it's easy to get him there, then we're going. If it's hard, we may stay and, you know, run somewhere else. But, and we're not ruling out running him in Florida either. Certainly the Holy Grail Fountain Youth Florida Derby, he'll be nominated to all those. But my instinct says that maybe Tizabama ends up in those races.
Let's give everybody the Tis the Bomb update, because of course the racing was underway and word came that he was going to scratch, and you know there was real interest in his participation and returning to the dirt after you know the series of excellent performances on grass. Some inflammation, and you speculated that it might have been a little infection. What has it turned out to be?
Well, it's nothing. He had some sort of little scratch or nick on the back of that leg or the side of that leg, and we've been watching it and didn't really think much of it. We've been sweating it, and we cleaned it up real good, and maybe did it in a workout or a gallop one morning. It'd been real muddy all week. We sent him out and galloped in the mud. Anyway, we left it open the morning of the races, looked perfect. I went in and checked his legs, and it was clean as a whistle. And we left him open for a few hours, before his race, and the leg got inflamed. And we looked at it with the vet, and he said, "Look, we actually had already scanned it. It scanned fine, just to make sure it wasn't a tendon or anything, and it wasn't. And we were thrilled with that. So okay, it's not really a problem. And then it filled back up, and we." Nice. Made a decision. The right thing was just to wait, and it'll be fine. One of those things. You know, we deal with all these little issues. People don't realize how hard it is sometimes. And one of those things that we addressed, and we did the right thing, and the owner was fine with it, and no problem. We'll just regroup and find the right spot for him.
Excellent.
I've got to jump off here in 7 minutes. You got me.
That's fine.
More minutes.
No problem. So do I. We got Andy. Got Andy Serling. Can't be late for Andy. Talk about the girls' race. We got a couple actually to talk about. Boma wins that allowance for Mrs. Moulton, and that was great. But some thoughts on what transpired in the girls' race, where it really felt like Sandstone was way the filly to beat.
Yeah, we were disappointed in her. You know, she ran a little flat. I thought she was going to be probably my easiest winner of the day, but it tells you how hard it is. She came back fine. We're going to probably back off of her for a little bit and then point her towards, maybe the Silver Bullet Day. Do they still call it that over there?
They do.
the Fairgrounds Oaks. Those are races we've won a couple times. I wouldn't rule out her going to Arkansas either. You know, the Gulfstream Park Oaks is a little bit later in the season. I wish Gulfstream would write some two-term filly stakes. I know they write a six furlong, and then the Devona Dale, I think, is a one-turn mile. I don't think those are distances this filly wants anything to do with. I've actually asked them, please write these two turns, but they don't. But anyway, other than that, I mean, she's fine. And Boma, we're going to probably back off, and I'm not – right now I don't have a plan with her. Both of those fillies are going to get the whole month of December off, and then they'll go back into training after the first of the year. Once again, they'll go to Gulfstream, and we'll put them on, you know, in the program down there.
Not a bad weekend, Kenny. All things considered.
Yeah, you know, super. I'm really proud of my team. You know, I think I said it in some of the interviews. It's, you know, it takes a village. I mean, if it wasn't for Dominic in Florida, if it's not for Kevin Ryan, one of those unsung heroes that runs the trucks and takes horses here and there and everywhere for us. You got Alan Shell who runs the farm. I mean, he does a fantastic job over there. Leaves me a whole lot less to worry about. And then, you know, Greg Geyer, my assistant Churchill. I got Ray Brennan, sure. Keeneland. You know, it's a team of people. Mike Morrison's catching horses coming into Gulfstream already, and we'll keep plugging along. I think we're going to be a little quiet during the December and January period, and we're going to run some maidens, and I do have a couple in the stake next weekend at Oaklawn, but we'll be a little lower key, and then come February, March, and April, we'll be getting geared back up.
Well, we should also mention, Kenny, before I let you go, for those that, you know, keep track, this has been your best year in terms of earnings, which is saying something. Congratulations.
Well, thanks. You know what? We've been focused in on, I really want to take our outfit into the top 10. I think we're perfectly capable of doing that. And we're digging in hard to get better horses and do a better job, and you know, and I'm getting the resources as far as being able to buy the young horses that we want and need, and it makes everything a whole lot easier. And you need a team too, and a lot of things have come together, and I think we're only going to get stronger.
Well, you know, having the luxury of a Swiss skydiver certainly goes a long way to, you know, to being an engine on a seasonal train, and an amazing career. And it's been a, you know, overall, you look at everything else and all the other winners. This was not a one trick season by any means. And Kenny, as we wrap up, Olivia of the Desert and Semble Just on Saturday at Oaklawn in the second stake, second day of the meet. What do we know?
You know, she's won a couple of listed stakes already, and I anticipate that this is a really good spot for her. You know, she's a real pro, and she's trained really good. She had her last workout with En Boutant last weekend, or she actually had another one since then, but she held her own right there. I think she's up for a really good race. And the other filly, Semble Just, is a good filly in her own right. She's run really well lately. French bred filly, or Irish and French, but she runs really well in the dirt. Actually, she's a better dirt horse than she is turf.
And then Wicked Genius is also running on Saturday in the second.
He got hung on the also eligible at Churchill on the last day of the meeting.
Yeah.
We were disappointed he didn't get in, but he's a nice horse in his own right, man, and doing super right now. And I haven't studied the PPs on that race yet, but I suspect he's got a chance if it sets up right.
Well, Kenny, finishing up really strong, and it's been a special year, and it looks like you're poised for a tremendous 2022. I don't know if we'll talk between now and when we wrap up our broadcast season, so if we don't, you know, best wishes for the holiday season, and congratulations again on the best year really yet for the McPeak team.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
Kenny McPeak, everybody, and heading into the classic season on the boys' side, obviously.